We are privileged to bring to you another series of spiritual conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J., professor at the Jesuit School of Theology in Chicago and at St. John's University in New York. Father Hardin is a well-known retreat master, author, and spiritual director. Each conference in this series is complete in itself, and yet together they form a full retreat, the overall theme being sacrifice and love. The heart of all spirituality is sacrifice, and a spiritual life not built on sacrifice is building on sand. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Mary, the model of faith for priests. Father Hardin.
The subject of the present conference is Mary, the model of faith for priests. There is no doubt that the Blessed Virgin promises to become a providential means of assisting the Church in the future, even as she has so mightily helped the Church in critical times in the past. After all, she is, and has most solemnly been declared by the Vatican Council as Mother of the Church for the best of reasons. As Mother of the Church, she may be assumed to protect and provide for the faithful in times of great need, as ours certainly are. And this no less than she helped to nurture the mystical body in apostolic times. We speak of Mary being the mother of Christ twice over, the mother of the physical Christ whom she brought into the world, and the mother of the mystical Christ, whom, shall we say, she also nurtured and continues to care for until the end of time. But there is one aspect of Mary's role as Mother of the Church that deserves more attention than it has been getting, namely, her role as the pattern of faith that we are all to imitate. Whatever else we say about the Church in modern times, we must say it is going through a crisis of faith. Hence the dire need of a model for us to follow. If the faith that was purchased with the blood of so many martyrs, and I should ask, still being paid for by the blood of martyrs, is to grow in the hearts of believers and propagate among the millions who, after 1900 years, have not yet even been evangelized. May I, by way of parenthesis, strongly recommend careful reading and prayerful meditation on Pope Paul VI's most important declaration on evangelization recently issued to the Catholic world. There is no better pattern for imitation here of the faith than Mary, who next to Christ is the perfect example of what we should be. But unlike Christ, whose holiness was founded not on vision, as was his, but on faith, where she and we are so totally in common, our focus of reflection is more specific. However, we wish to consider Mary not only, though also, as the paradigm of faith for all Christians. A paradigm, you know, is a fundamental pattern a model or an exemplar that one can profitably imitate. A paradigm is the fundamental pattern. Mary is the fundamental pattern for Christians to imitate in the practice of the faith. She is then the most effective model of faith, not only for all Christians, but for our purpose, especially for priests. In making our reflections, I suggest we address ourselves to two simple questions and answer them briefly but pointedly. Why is Mary specially appropriate as the model of faith for priests? And how can her practice of faith teach us, all the faithful, but especially priests, to live out more faithfully, all of us, our Christian commitment, and priests, their priesthood, to which her Son has ordained them? Why is Mary the perfect model of faith for priests? This should not be a difficult question to answer. Why she is such a perfect exemplar of faith for priests in the Catholic Church. The reason, ultimately, is her close intimacy with Jesus Christ, comparable to the intimacy that a priest is expected to have and cultivate in virtue of his office. Where shall we begin to describe Mary's nearness to her divine Son? He was near her because he was within her during the 9 months of his conception in her womb. He was near her as the one she brought forth at Bethlehem, the one she nursed and clothed and fed in infancy. And we might add, Christ being an infant, which means speechless, the speechless one, how near she must have been when she first taught him how to use his lips. She must have told him to watch hers, and then he imitated his mother. He was the one she spoke with and cared for and talked about all through his days at Nazareth. the one who is constantly on her mind during his public life, the one she accompanied on the way to Calvary, and with whom she remained as the valiant woman to the last, as he expired on the cross. Mary would have made a good nurse. She was not afraid of blood. As we turn to a priest, is not his life so much like Mary's in his own closeness to the physical Christ in the Eucharist? It is the lips of a priest that bring down Christ on the altar, and his words that make possible the renewal of Christ's death in the sacrifice of the Mass. As I learned the first time I genuflected at the altar after my first consecration. Talk about having to make an act of faith to believe that what you said changed bread into Christ. It is the hands of a priest that handle the sacred elements which contain the person of Christ, the Son of God, but also the Son of Mary. It is the person of the priest, through whom the eternal High Priest continues his presence in our midst, no less, though now invisibly, than he was present among his contemporaries in Palestine. He's just plain here. No wonder the priest has been par excellence identified in Catholic history as the Alter Christus, the other Christ, since he more than any other Christian is privileged to deal on such close terms with the Savior. But for this very reason, the priest must learn from Mary that just being close to Christ is not enough. Judas was close to Christ when he kissed him. Pilate was close to Christ when he condemned him. Those who scourged Christ were close to him when they shredded his body with thorns. Those who placed the crown of thorns on the head of Christ were very close to him, as were the executioners who nailed him to the cross. Like Mary, and unlike these characters we have just identified, like Mary, the priest must not only be close to Christ, he must also be familiar with Christ. You see, closeness is of body, familiarity is of spirit. A priest must not suppose that nearness is the same as intimacy, or that proximity is the same as familiarity. What a mistake! And by now, what a tragedy! Because unless this closeness, or physical nearness, is cultivated to become also spiritual intimacy, it can degenerate first from casualness and indifference to a positive cynicism and the most incredible distance in spirit from the Christ that a man is perforce by his office near to Christ physically. Two people, say a husband and wife, who, while living together in physical cohabitation, must, as I've told so many married couples by now, either after what may have seemed to be a romantic courtship, they really begin to grow in love, in spiritual intimacy, or their physical nearness will become painful, and if it gets too bad, unbearable. There is no one from whom we can become more restrained than the one who is near us in body, but from whom we have become separated in soul. Let me add some observations, which are meant not only for priests, but all those who in any way are called upon to assist priests. And here I would say, all the faithful have a God-given responsibility to help priests go in that intimacy with Jesus on which all their efficacy in the priesthood depends. Sure, they can, we know, validly administer the sacraments, validly offer Mass, no matter how unholy they may be. But by now we know, how sadly we know, the consequences of unholiness in the priest in whom the faithful should see their Savior. This familiarity, which applies to all of us because we are all called upon to grow in intimacy with Jesus, but especially the priest, it requires, first of all, sacrifice of other intimacies to which we, and especially the priest, have no right. A priest grows in familiarity with Christ as he sacrifices all other familiarities that are incompatible with His priesthood. And don't tell me that does not mean sacrifice. But that is the first price of the priesthood. The sacrifice of all intimacy that is incompatible with familiarity with Jesus. It means effort. If I am to grow in intimacy with anyone, I must necessarily have that person on my mind. We love only what we know, right? And we love only as much as we know. Now, we can love less, but we won't love more. Am I clear? If then, we or for our immediate purpose, the priest is to grow in intimacy with Christ, he must have Christ often. I really mean to say always on his mind. If anyone, and especially the priest, is to grow in intimacy with the Redeemer, we and he must keep Christ in our hearts. And we know what this means, because our hearts, being made to love, can go in only two possible directions, either towards creatures or towards God. And they go in the direction of God only in so far as they do not go out to, do not indulge, give up, mortify, going out to creatures. We read some of the most frightening passages in John of the Cross. The heart of man, he says, was made for God. And it can love God only by giving up creatures. Only. Hear it? Only. So that whatever creatures are loved only because of and insofar as the love of God dominates my heart. And finally, to grow in this indispensable intimacy with Christ, a priest must pray for the grace to do what Christ especially wants him to do, to be to the faithful Jesus on earth. It is for this reason that I never tire begging the faithful to pray and sacrifice for priests. Because in the providence of God, the church's well-being, her very existence, in any period of history or region of geography, depends on the sanctity of her priests. And another word for sanctity is familiarity with Jesus Christ. So much for part one. We now ask ourselves how Mary's faith teaches priests. This, after all, is our main concern here, to see how Mary's manner of acting on what she believed can teach all the faithful, but especially priests, to do the same. What were the qualities of Mary's faith that a priest can well, he better, imitate? Mary's faith was a trustful faith. Hers, therefore, was a faith built on confidence. At the Annunciation, as Luke describes the event, Mary was invited to become the mother of the Holy One, who was to be called the Son of God. Remember, unlike us, she had none of the evidence we now possess to the truth of the Incarnation. She was the one who got, well, the Incarnation started. So there was no Incarnation before the Incarnation. She had none of the centuries of believers that we can build our faith upon, as on a secure refuge for reason to undergird the faith. She stood alone as the bridge between the old and the new covenants. It was her faith that bridged the two testaments. A young girl who had just heard a strange, we may be sure, heretofore unseen messenger call her full of grace and asked her to consent to becoming the mother of the Savior. How strange of God! Really, how normal of God. God asks us to do His will. She consented. And the second person of the Eternal Trinity was conceived in her womb, but only because she had first conceived Him in her mind by faith, as all the fathers of the church testify. She was worthy to conceive in body because she had first conceived by faith in spirit.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.